James Hahn II.
And I'm Mark McClure.
And you're listening to This Week in Oil and Gas. This is the podcast for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Welcome in, Mr. LaCour.
Glad to be here, James. How you doing?
I'm pretty excited. I think, okay, I need to republish this week's other podcast because I was just looking at what show we're on, and this is show number 9. We're almost to double digits already.
Wow. It's been great.
It's exciting. Oh, by the way, folks, so I'm James Hahn II. I'm from a company called Tribe Rocket. We are brand architects for next generation oil field leaders. And what do you do, Mark?
Yeah, we're at modalpoint.com. We do key market research in the oil and gas industry.
Okay, yeah. And we've done a little research and found a handful of stories from around the globe. So let's go ahead and jump in. We have, first of all, Saudi Aramco still ambitious in slowing China. What's happening?
Yeah, so China's oil and gas consumption is actually slowed down. And we talked about this last year. But Saudi Aramco is actually one of the few foreign companies that have partnered with some of China's national oil company at a pretty deep level. So Saudi Aramco has seen some slowdown in their work with some of the nationalized oil companies like Sinopec and CNOOC in China. And so they're actually trying to figure out another place in the market where they can expand, you know. And so they looked at actually partnering with some of the state-owned retail gas stations in China, and basically the Chinese government said no. And then they're looking at trying to grow some refining capacity. It's a very strategic move by Saudi Aramco, who China is one of their larger clients, and Saudi Aramco is trying to grow market share there. Right now, I think China buys about 18% of their crude from Saudi Aramco. So that's substantial.
We got Saudi Aramco holds 25% stake, and it's the same held by ExxonMobil China. So that's interesting.
Yeah, that's in an actual refining complex. I think it's called a Fujian refining petrochemical complex.
And then it goes on to talk about changing markets and so forth. What's shifting over there?
A slowdown in economic growth. The Chinese government is still, it's not capitalism. So the Chinese government has propped up their economy for at least the last 10 years. And you can only do that so long. And so the Chinese government's having to pull back a little bit from their investment internally, which then is leading to slower economic growth. They're still growing, right? They're not going backwards, but the percentage of growth has slowed down.
Because I remember people were even talking about maybe it being a bubble that they were creating over there. What do you have any insight on that?
Yeah. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a bubble. I would call it a bit of a peak. It's not going to burst. It will slowly deflate, you know, like instead of a balloon popping and somebody stick a hole in it, slowly deflates. Simply because you can only, with your own cash, you can only prop up your own country's economics for X amount of time. I mean, we did it here in the U.S. when we had the downturn in 2009, and we spent a lot of money on that, and money doesn't grow on trees. So it's a good approach by the Chinese government to try to let market forces come back and kind of recorrect everything.
All right, cool. So that's always good to see communists doing things that are capitalistic. All right, moving over to Africa, more international companies venture into oil exploration development in Ghana.
Yep. So we're still in a low crude environment. This is April 2015. But the oil and gas industry as a whole knows that's a temporary blip on the radar. Deep water and ultra deep water is expensive oil to get out of the ground, but there will be a point in the very near future where it's profitable to do that. Ghana has some very good deep water and ultra deep water plays out there that have been explored extensively. So this is just a couple of companies coming in and helping to develop. Oceaneering is out there, General Electric, GE and Oil and Gas, and both of those are subsea manufacturers. GE and Oil and Gas makes trees and blowout preventers and that sort of stuff, and Oceaneering's umbilicals and pipelines. Real quick side note, funny thing about Oceaneering, I love this company. They do oil and gas subsea work, and they build amusement park rides. Right, you go to Disney, those amusement park rides, most of them are built by Oceaneering. And the reason it's that way is the amount of structural engineering that needs to take place in both of those environments are the same, and both of those environments need a zero defect product. You can't have a subsea tree break. You can't have a roller coaster break. So it's an interesting crossover from an engineering point of view.
Coming from someone that's from Michigan, which is near enough to Cedar Point, which is known as America's roller coast. I really appreciate that as well. Have you ever heard of that place, Mark?
Absolutely. That's world famous.
Yeah. Yeah. So they have the top thrill dragster. So you go from, I think it's 0 to 127 in under 30 seconds, and you go straight up and straight down. Good times.
That's crazy.
Good times. All right. So now we've got some talk on Halliburton from Seeking Alpha. Key takeaways from Halliburton results and conference call. Yeah, lots of talk about Halliburton. So what was the conference call all about?
Yeah, so Halliburton announced earnings on, I think it's just this past Monday, and we predicted that the earnings were going to be substandard. The oil and gas service industry as a whole is hurting right now from this low crude price. And unfortunately for Halliburton, unlike their competitor Schlumberger, most of Halliburton's business is in the U.S., which, as we all know, the upstream side of the U.S., the frackers, have taken a hit. So there's less need for Halliburton services. So this report is a good insight into what Halliburton's executives are thinking is going to happen. They think that we have not hit rock bottom yet, but that it's close. They're actually predicting June of 2015. And of course, you know, here at Modal Point, we think we've already hit rock bottom. So we'll see who's right, Modal Point or Halliburton. And they expect a slow growth out of it. And they don't expect oil to hit $100 a barrel for quite a long time, which I actually agree with.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like that. I like that juxtaposition, Halliburton versus Modal Point. So it's a race to the death.
Yep.
So what I mean, other than just saying, okay, there's some slowdowns, is there anything else that we can learn from here?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion right now on wells that have been drilled but haven't been completed. And we've looked at this, and there's some people in the industry right now that are predicting a second low period. They're actually saying oil will hit $25 a barrel.
They're going down to 25 now? This is 20. We were saying they were crazy for 30. That was, what, 3-4 weeks ago?
Right. And I don't think we're going to have a second dip. I think we have a lot of crude that's stored. You have to pay to store it. You don't go and dump that on the market until you make your money back. Same way with these wells that aren't completed. The smart operators are going to wait till the prices go back up before you spend the money to complete those wells and go in production. However, Halliburton's saying that they're looking at that and they think that it may keep oil prices lower for longer than is needed. So, like we said, it's Halliburton's a very smart company. I love that company to death. I've known them for over 20 years. They have some really smart people there. Let's see what happens.
Right. And I just want to compliment them on this line right here. Gradually invest in oil and gas companies with low leverage, as these companies have the flexibility to lower production until oil prices recover. Always a nice takeaway to give the obvious invest in companies that are not over leveraged.
So, right.
It's like, thank you very much for that. That throwaway line. Anyway, just picking on Seeking Alpha, those people are infinitely smarter than I. So, Bloomberg News, an energy company once worth $1 billion, is putting itself up for sale.
Yeah, this is Niska Gas Storage. Niska actually just unfortunately played their cards wrong. The need for gas storage is not as big as they thought it was, and so not as many companies are paying them to store gas. And the reason for that is because of the success of our fracking fields. The reason that you typically store gas in the U.S., you produce it at a low dollar value, you store it, and then basically you wait for the winter to hit for most of the country, and then you can sell that gas to the northern part of the U.S. at a much higher profit rate. Well, unfortunately, places like North Dakota is producing tons and tons of gas, right? So the business model of storing it, waiting for prices to go up, and then selling it, it just isn't valid right now in the U.S. And so, like I said, Niska just played its cards wrong. So at one point, they're worth $1 billion, and now they're out there selling themselves. I think their stock peaked probably around $20, and I think it's below $2 now. So, good luck to them, and it's going to be interesting to see who picks them up.
Yeah, $2.25 here, and it says any buyer would also have to absorb nearly $827 million in debt.
Yeah, they'll find a buyer. No doubt they'll find a buyer. Now, unfortunately, if you're a shareholder there, you're probably not going to get your money back. But that's the name of the game.
And so how does that happen? Did they just scale out too fast and build out things that weren't necessary or needed?
They had a bad financial model, right? So their financial model was based upon what historically happens, which is you produce natural gas at a cheap price. You store it, the winter hits, the Northeast pays premium for it, and you make that profit on it. What they didn't look at when they were building their financial model is the fact that maybe gas production will hit the point where that model just doesn't work. Whereas, and I don't care if you're in Detroit, Michigan in January, you can buy gas dirt cheap from North Dakota, right? We don't need to store it in the South and sell it in the North anymore. We have so much gas in this country that it's actually changing longstanding business models. And here's a good example.
So that's interesting. It's kind of, I think maybe I even heard you say it about Florida selling oranges to California and vice versa. It's like all of a sudden there's all of these new places that can grow fruit, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a great analogy. That same exact thing. Imagine if Florida no longer needed to buy oranges from California, you could buy them from Georgia, right? Right next door. So, good analogy.
So, Phillips 66, time is on my side. What's up with that?
So Phillips 66 is the downstream and midstream part of what used to be ConocoPhillips, right? And we've talked about this before. Basically, refineries are rocking and rolling right now. If you're in the oil and gas industry, you need to be looking at refineries. And not just fuels, not just gasoline, diesel, jet fuels, but all this other stuff that's refined. Petrochemicals, fertilizers, plastics. And Phillips 66 is in a really good place. They're making tons of money. They have a lot of capital to invest. They're making smart capital decisions. They're forecasting that crudes can stay low, crude natural gas can stay low, which is their feedstock, which is what they turn into other stuff. So, and then their midstream part, their pipelines, they're doing very well. They're using their money to build pipelines to be able to transport this crude and natural gas from all these frac fields to their refineries. So just a real, they're in a really good place, as are all of the refineries right now in the U.S.
Right. So summary and conclusion, Phillips 66, four operating segments are all poised to benefit off today's low commodity prices. What's this about a shale USA renaissance?
So and the shale renaissance, I mean, we've talked about this before. We have literally changed the dynamics of the oil and gas industry. We don't import nearly as much as we used to, and that's going to continue to go down. Hopefully, we can start exporting if we lift the law on that. Our refineries are set up, are starting to retrofit to refine the sweet crude that we're producing. You have a huge build out in downstream plants, you know, LNG, ethylene crackers, to capitalize on this cheap natural gas on the market. So it's, you know, the electricity companies are switching to natural gas instead of coal, which is better for the environment. So it really is a renaissance.
So, all right, cool. Yeah, we've got so we've covered upstream, midstream, downstream. Let's talk M&A. Five ways plummeting energy prices are changing M&A.
Yeah, this is going to be this year, next year will be the M&A year, I think, in the history of oil and gas. Basically, right now, you have a bunch of assets out there that are devalued. So you can buy stuff for pennies on a dollar. It is guaranteed to go back up. You have companies out there that are not in a good position. And then you have the opposite side. You have people with a lot of cash. You have oil and gas companies with a lot of cash and a strong stock value. So this is a perfect environment for mergers and acquisitions. Basically, the good guys go pick up the bad guys. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, we've had some major M&A activity already. You know, you had Halliburton acquire Baker Hughes. You had Shell acquire BG. We're still predicting ExxonMobil is going to pick up BP. And we won't predict this, but we know ExxonMobil's looking at Anadarko. I mean, these are not small mergers and acquisitions. These are huge things. And it's just going to continue. The thing that's interesting is on the investment side of the house, the people that don't know oil and gas but know how to make money, what they're trying to figure out right now is, have we hit rock bottom? You know, is this the time to buy, or do we need to wait a little while longer? We think we've hit rock bottom. Shell thinks we hit rock bottom, right? Because they would have waited to the last minute of devaluation to buy BG. So that's what's going on right now. Just a great time to be in the industry. There's money everywhere.
And speaking of money everywhere, though, because they touch on this point here on number three, capital is more constrained. And then they touch it, just the one of the last quotes here throws in 2008, which I remember from my days at Quicken Loans. And so how does that benefit? Is it because hedge funds have the opportunity because banks aren't as loose with the cash?
Well, what's happening is in the oil and gas industry, there's this constant flux of borrowing money for different parts of the business and then paying it back. It's actually an industry in itself. And those bases of those tanks of money that you can borrow from have shrunk. So it's harder to tap into that capital. Now, at the same time, interest rates are still relatively low. So you have some companies, including financial organizations, that are cash heavy right now, right? And they can make a premium on their cash even because interest rates are low. Then you have other companies that are quite honestly cash constrained. BP right now is cash constrained. You know, there's business units of Chevron that are cash constrained. And so that's what they're talking about. Capital is more constrained this year than it was last year. But there is still tons of capital out there.
Well, and then some more good news. So yesterday, we had Earth Day, and I have to throw in a plug for Mark J. Perry because I love his AEI Carpe Diem blog. So how about a Capitalism Day to balance out Earth Day to remind us of what's behind environmental improvements? We've talked about this, I'd say, quite a few times at this point, but I just explained the whole what fracking has done for the parts per million to a friend of mine yesterday, and obviously, I mean, he lives in Florida. He has no connection to the industry outside of me, and he was pretty shocked to hear that.
Yeah, it's we actually did a really nice blog post celebrating Earth Day with the benefits that the oil and gas industry has brought to the planet. A lot of people don't think about history. If you would go back, say, 300 years and grab somebody, if you had a time machine, and you'd bring him up to now, he would not know what to do, right? They burned coal and wood to cook on. They had no transportation. People died of disease a lot. They had no air conditioning, no heating, so dying of frostbite was actually a real thing. No immunizations, no mass transit, no ability to ship food around the world for pennies. He would love the world we live in. And then if you look at the numbers, and you don't hear this a lot, but it's legit. If you look at the numbers, our air pollution peaked in 1980, and our air is now 75% cleaner than it was. Back in 1980, about two-thirds of the fresh water in the U.S. was not you couldn't swim in it and you couldn't eat the fish out of it. We flipped that completely around. I mean, everybody that's listening to this podcast probably remembers the smog days over L.A. That's gone. Acid rain on the East Coast, that's gone. All the rivers and lakes that were polluted, it's gone. We've went over our industrial hump. Our pollution output has decreased every year since 1980. It's a great time, and it's great for the planet. And a lot of that can be contributed to the oil and gas industry.
That's fascinating because I have not heard the term acid rain in a really long time, but I remember a lot of skits about it when I was growing up in the 80s.
Right. We fixed it, right? What happened, we've removed the lead from the gasoline. We've removed the sulfur from the diesel. Our air is so clean now. It's ridiculous. And it keeps getting cleaner, which is good. It's good for us. It's good for the industry. It's good for the economy. It's good for the world.
All right. And speaking of cleaning up, we've got Weld County authorities fined $300,000 in drill bits from oil and gas sites.
Yeah, this is a classic crook story. You know, the hardware that's used in the oil and gas industry, especially upstream, has gotten much more sophisticated, in which case it's much more valuable, which means that at some point some bad guys could try to make some money by stealing it. Unfortunately for these bad guys, they got busted. And, you know, a drill bit on a frac field is not like the drill bit you put in your drill at your house. It doesn't weigh like a couple ounces. That thing's heavy and it's big right. And it's awkward to move around. So it's not like they could pick these things up and run. So they just got nailed by the cops, which is a good.
When the guys went down to get the drill, to get the drill bits, they were gone. I don't know. What is the black market you're selling that on? I guess to a buddy in the field? I mean, where?
Yeah, so unfortunately, like everything else, there is a black market out there. And the bad thing about the black market, and you know, some smaller operators out there, I'm not going to call out any names, but I know who you are, who have bought stuff on the black market. The problem is it hasn't been tested, right? Hasn't been Magnaflux, hasn't been guaranteed safe. When you're buying something like that and you have your roughnecks out there operating that, somebody could get hurt or die. So stop it. Stop buying stuff on the black market.
Wow. Clearly, there's a huge black market. Now that I'm looking at this line here, crime in oil fields is on the rise, and thefts on oil fields across the country are approaching $1 billion a year nationally. That's insane.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh. Well, let's close on the good note. National Funk Congress deadlocked on get up, get down issue. So that's the Weekly Onion. We'll throw that into the show notes. But let's touch on OTC again because we have some good news, do we not, Mr. LaCour?
Yeah, so we have an invitation-only event, National Allwell Varco's Annual Shrimp Boil. This is a huge event at OTC, and if you're going, you better go. And National Allwell was nice enough to give us some free passes to give out to our listeners, and we had 10 of them. And what are we up to, James? How many have we given away?
We've given away 7 now, so we only have 3 left, which is awesome.
Yeah, and so what do you have to do if you want to get one of those 3?
Yeah, so this is what you do, folks. You go to triberocket.com/iTunes. That's going to take you into the iTunes store, and you might have to create an iTunes account, or if you have one, you just go in there and leave a review. We love 4- and 5-star reviews, but you know, speak from the heart. But if you are one of the final 3 people, because you know, as we said last week, we're getting unbelievably thousands of downloads each week, and it actually keeps doubling, which is incredible. And so, if you want to get your hands on one of those, first of all, go to triberocket.com/iTunes, leave the review. And then for everyone that did this, because this was my mistake last week, and thankfully, one of the people that left a review sent me an email, and I said, yes, I forgot that part. So if you're one of the other six people, please email me at james@triberocket.com. It's james@triberocket.com, and we'll get you those passes if you're one of the other six people. And if you happen to become one of the final three people, do the same. Leave the review. Send me an email letting me know it's there, and we'll get you in.
Good.
Yeah, so I guess that's about it for this week. I think we're pretty much right at 20 minutes, which is wonderful. And I guess it's time to go out there and get funky, Mr. LaCour.
Yep, do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
Go find some grease, guys.
If those roughnecks from that operating company caught somebody just stealing their drill bits, there's going to be some major ass whooping going on. That's the crazy thing about those criminals. Why would you dare get a roughneck mad at you? That's nuts.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously, you're going to end up down hole.